This is a wonderful time today. I'm so blessed because I actually turned 70 today. Yeah. So join the 70 club. And I think it's going to be, the next decade is going to be the best ever. And one of the things that I'm just so thankful for is to have the privilege to know so many beautiful, beautiful, wonderful saints all over the country and all over the world. And even just already today, people sending me so many messages and everything. It's kind of almost overwhelming. It's like, how did I deserve to have this, you know? But I'm so thankful, and I'm thankful for all of your lives and for coming today and getting to share too. It's a real privilege. It's just so, so special. So what I'm going to talk about today is this exact title, Moved with Compassion. And I'm going to talk about the word compassion and what it means in Hebrew and a little bit in Aramaic. And you know how I like to do that, right? So you won't be disappointed today. The word in Hebrew actually literally means bowels. And bowels are not something that we normally talk about very much. You know, we shouldn't, you know, we don't want to talk about it because it's kind of messy, the idea of it. But bowels in Hebrew thought, you know, this whole center section of your body, it represented their feelings. Like the tender feelings that you have, they believed originated from your bowels. And even the word, the action of the word, which in Hebrew is rakam, it means to be soft or gentle, and it's related to the word for womb. So like the idea of a baby in the womb is taken care of by surrounding it by water and cushioning it against everything as it's growing. It's nurtured, protected, you know, that kind of thing. And that's what this action of this verb is. And it's the idea that God's compassion just surrounds us and it cushions us and it gives us protection. So that's the idea of the phrase about bowels of compassion. You put it together, bowels meaning the tender feelings of compassion. So think about it in terms of this whole idea of surrounding something. Okay? That's the first thing I wanted you to see. And we would probably in our culture say something more like our feelings come from our heart, right? But I really like this picture of the bowels, and you'll see as we go along how important it really is to kind of get it more like, this is coming from my gut here. You know, when you talk about, you know, I just went through a whole operation with my gut, so this is very real to me. That, you know, that's something that you just take for granted normally, right? But truly, when it's not working right, then you have to say, okay, well, we need to get this together here because this is not fun. And anyway, so your feelings. And the whole idea of Hebrew thinking is that feelings come from this part of your body here. So I wanted to look at a couple records in the Old Testament first. And this one was when, it's in Genesis 43, if you want to turn there. And I'm going to be reading mostly from King James today. And this is when Joseph, you know, the brothers had come to get grain, and Joseph had recognized them, and he sends them back and puts the money back in their sacks, and then he eventually says, no, you have to bring your brother Benjamin here. And so even though Jacob doesn't want to bring him, they end up finally bringing him to Egypt. And Joseph has a big dinner for them. And so verse 30 says, and Joseph made haste, like he had to leave the room when he saw his brother Benjamin. says, because his bowels did yearn upon his brother, and he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber and wept there. He had such deep feelings, and it was so overwhelming almost when he saw his brother Benjamin after all those years. You know, it's probably at least 18 years, something like that, maybe 15 years, because he got captured when he was about 16, and now he's about 30, so about 15 years. He had not seen his brother for 15 years. So his whole, all his feelings were pouring out about that, and I love that the way King James says, he yearned. He yearned after his brother. So then there's another record with Solomon, and that's in 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon was the wisest man, right? He had asked for wisdom. And he has these two women come to him, and they each had had a baby, and the one baby had died. And so the woman whose baby had died is wanting to take the baby from the other woman. And Solomon goes to God and says, okay, how should I handle this? And so he tells the two women, okay, just divide the baby and you can each have half. And so verse 26 said, then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, O Lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, well, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. And so it was apparent to Solomon, and it really showed who was the true mother, because her heart had so longed for her child to live. That's why the feelings were coming from her bowels, see. And other translations say her heart yearned, or she was deeply stirred. You know, if someone had told you, here, take your child and just divide it, you know, you would go like, no, don't, anything but that, please, you know. Anyway, so those are two records where it actually talks about bowels, and that's not the only ones, but those are just some examples to show you that it has this idea of really yearning and deep feelings. So the word rekem or rekam ends with a M, okay? And the letter M, mame, it stands for spiritual life or water. And in the Aramaic word too, it also has the same spelling. And when you talk about water being spiritual life, it's like it gets poured out to us. So the mame shows that when you come to the water, you come to seek for God's water, you know, then you find his love, his mercy, his compassion, his care, all those things wrapped up in the place where he leads us to the still waters. And when we get to the still waters, you know, that's where the life is. And so when we want to look at Jesus Christ's life and how he was, it says he was really moved with compassion. What he wanted to do in all of these records is he wanted to impart spiritual life in some way to people, either by way of physical healing or healing their soul or any kind of healing, any kind of help. Bring the water. Let's get the water. And so when we look at some of these records, when Jesus was moved with compassion, he saw the need of the people, and then he wanted to provide whatever water they needed. See? If they needed healing, then he would provide the healing. So the first record I want to look at is, it's very early in his ministry. He just starts preaching. So Mark chapter 1, in verse 40. It says, there came a leper to him, beseeching him, and kneeling down to him, and saying unto him, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him and said unto him, I will, be thou clean. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy departed from him and he was cleansed. Now culturally, you just don't do this. You don't go up and touch a leper, because if you do, then you're going to be unclean for the next 7 days. And that means you can't go in the temple, you can't worship. There's a lot of things. You're not supposed to touch anybody else. But Jesus he didn't care. When it said he was moved with compassion, see, his bowels yearned. He started yearning about seeing this man who had leprosy. And all he wanted to do was help him. So he said, you know, I do want to make you clean. And he just put forth his hand and touched him. And in that moment, the man was just so overwhelmed with that love that he was showing that he received his healing just like that. And leprosy is very obvious disease, you know, your hands and everything. So, I mean, he must have grown back all of his hands, and just his skin turned completely whole immediately. I would have just loved to have seen that, you know. But I've heard of a lot of stories and testimonies in India particularly, because they do still have leprosy there, where people have gotten healed like that, where it just immediately your skin became whole. And so this is really cool, though, that it just shows that he was willing to do whatever it took and not to be influenced by the culture or the law or any of the other things that would have maybe prevented him from touching him. So now look at Mark chapter 6. In verse 34, this is kind of a general statement, but it's true what Jesus did in so many other cases, where, like, he fed the 5,000, it says he was moved with compassion there. Verse 34 says, and Jesus, when he came out, he saw much people. When he saw the crowds, he was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep, not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. So see what I said about the water? What kind of water does this crowd need here? And when he was so moved with this love pouring out and wanting to surround the people, so then God would just show him, oh, you need to teach this. You need to say it like that. Behold, a sower went out to sow, and he sowed seed, and there was good ground, and there was thorny ground. You know, and he taught the people so they could understand, because he saw that they were like a sheep that had no shepherd. So he became the shepherd, right? He became the good shepherd. I love that. And it's a general statement, but it shows how he lived his life every single moment of every day. He was looking for the opportunities to help somebody. So now look at Luke 7. This one's kind of cool too. This is also where because he did this, he would have been unclean. Verse 11. And it came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and much people. So he had this whole crowd following him, right? Now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother. And she was a widow, and much people of the city was with her. So this was a very tragic thing, because she not only was a widow, but now her only son has passed away. Verse 13, and when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and he said, weep not. And he came and touched the bier, the coffin, you know, the place where the body, dead body was. And because he did that, it made him unclean. I mean, he literally touched the dead body, right? And they that bare him stood still, because they were like, no, you can't do that. You can't touch him. Then he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak. And he delivered him to his mother. And there came a fear or awe on all. And they glorified God, saying, that a great prophet is risen up among us, and that God has visited his people. So you see, when we get moved with compassion and something like fantastic like that happens, then God gets glorified. I heard a testimony yesterday from a guy who, it was really amazing. This would happen like 7 years ago or something. He had spoken to a homeless guy by a railroad tracks and basically had just rescued him from that situation, taken him to a shelter and helped him get on his feet. Well, come to find out, he'd seen him just recently and recognized him, and come to find out the man had gone to the shelter, he'd ended up getting born again, going in a discipleship program, becoming a pastor, and then when he saw this guy who was talking about the testimony, he said, I need to tell you what happened that day. And he said, what you told me was, the thing that you're thinking about doing is bad. You should not do it. You should come with me. And the guy who was talking, he goes, I don't even remember saying that. But he said, the next train that came by, I was going to throw myself in front of it and have it be over. I was that desperate. And what you told me, whatever it was that he heard, see, he heard what God wanted him to hear. He had the right water, see, and it just rescued his life and turned it completely around. And that happens so many times, over and over and over, when we just speak God's word. So anyway, I want to read one more record that Jesus did. That's Mark chapter 10, 46. And this is like right before the last Passover. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to be killed, you know, basically. And they came to Jericho. And when Jesus went out from Jericho and his disciples and a large crowd, well, here we have a large crowd again, Bartimaeus, a blind man, was sitting by the side of the road and begging. And he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene and he began to cry out and to say, Son of David, have compassion on me. And the crowd did not like this. they said, many were reproving him to be silent. But he was crying out all the more and saying, Son of David, have compassion on me. Have mercy on me. Right? That's what King James says, have mercy on me. But it's compassion. Get moved with compassion. I'm here. I'm blind. I want healing. And Jesus stopped and commanded that they call him. And they called the blind man and said to him, take courage and rise up. He calls you. See, the crowd was not very happy about this. So it doesn't matter what the crowd says, though. See, if you want healing and you seek for it, and just keep crying out, say, have mercy on me, then God provides it. And the blind man, verse 50, this is the key verse in this section, is the blind man threw off his garment and rose up and came to Jesus. Now what that means, it's not just simply, oh, you know, he threw off his coat and just ran to him. The mantle that he was wearing was like his license to be a beggar or his badge. Culturally, they had, you know, something that people would recognize, oh, yes, this guy is blind and he has the right to sit by the side of the road and beg. And the people would consider that if they gave money or whatever to the blind man, that it was like they were giving to God. Culturally, this is what it meant. So by him throwing off his mantle and throwing off his cloak, he was saying, like, I don't want to be blind anymore. I want to be healed. And I don't want to be a beggar anymore either. And I'm going to go to Jesus and I'm going to get my healing. And so Jesus says to him, well, what would you want me to do to you? And they were like, he can't see him, right? He's blind. Okay, so what he says is, my master, that I may see, that I may see you. He calls him his master, his Lord. See, it changes from Son of David, which is just a messianic title, to I want to make you Lord, and I want to see you. And so Jesus said to him, see, your faith has made you whole. And immediately he received sight and went on his way. So there's a couple records of blind people getting healed right around this exact same time. And another one of the records talks about two blind men come to him on the way out of Jericho too. And he heals them too. So it's the same thing though. See, Jesus was moved with compassion when he saw the blind man. And he saw that he really, really did want to have his sight. It wasn't just, oh yeah, that'd be really nice. No, he wanted it really badly. And so that's what made him whole. So there's a couple records in the epistles that we can look at too that talks about the bowels of Jesus Christ. And one of them is in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 8. For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ. So when it says that, see, in the bowels of Jesus Christ, what does it mean? It means the compassion of Jesus Christ. I long after you. He was writing, Paul was writing from prison to the Philippians, whom he hadn't seen since the second missionary journey, and he's longing to do something for them, to give them spiritual life, right? So right after that, he does this whole prayer. And that's also, we've been talking about prayer lately too, is, you know, when we have compassion for someone, then it issues in like this longing, like, I want to pray for you, I want to do something for you. And you long after that in the bowels of Jesus Christ, the compassion of Christ. And then there's another one, Colossians 3, verse 12. I mean, there's other records in the epistles too, but these are just a couple. Colossians 3, verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, what? Bowels of mercies. Yeah, I was talking to Bert before the fellowship, and he goes, he's talking about bowels of mercies, and I go, yeah, that's what I'm going to teach on today. And I think it's so cool that those are Holy Spirit words, you know, that come, right? Bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. So our attitude of compassion and allowing God to move within us like that, then it provides us service. You know, it's where we become aware of a need, like somebody is in front of you that has a need, and then this movement happens. It's like, okay, what can I do for you? And so then, you know, whatever that is it teaching? Is it guiding? Is it giving them something? Whatever. It doesn't have to only be healing, see? So that's why I wanted to show you before that when Jesus was moved with compassion, he taught the people. And that's the way we can do it too. So that's a really cool verse. Then the last section is Philemon. And there's a couple verses in Philemon. Philemon is a letter that Paul wrote to this man, and he's telling him that he met a guy named Onesimus in prison, and Onesimus had been a slave in Philemon's household, and he'd run away, and he ended up in Rome. And in Rome, he befriended Paul and ended up getting born again and helping Paul dramatically. So Paul sends him back to Philemon with this letter. And in the letter, he asks Philemon to receive the slave back as a brother in Christ instead of as a runaway. So he says to him in verse 7, this is Paul speaking to Philemon, "For we have great joy and consolation in thy love, in your love, because the bowels of the saints are refreshed by thee, brother." So he's telling Philemon, who had the reputation of being very compassionate, "Hey, I need you to be compassionate in this situation too." And Philemon, in verse 12, "Whom I have sent again, I sent Onesimus again. Thou therefore receive him that is my own bowels." So Paul is saying, you know, I ended up loving this man and helping him and reaching out to him, giving him spiritual water, seeing what it was that he needed, and now I'm sending him back to you to receive him as though it were my compassion that I'm giving to you. Isn't that cool? Verse 20, "Yea, brother, let me have joy of thee in the Lord. Refresh my bowels in the Lord." So he's just saying, if you receive Onesimus back like I'm asking you, what it will do is it will not only show him compassion, but it will show me compassion too. I just love that. I think that's so awesome. And that's what happens when we decide we want to get involved in people's lives. It's not only just to help others. What ends up happening is that you get this double dose back of love and compassion poured out on you too. You know? It's so cool. It's like this giving and receiving, giving, receiving, giving, receiving, giving, receiving. So that's the other part that being moved with compassion does, see, is it leads us to prayer, but it leads us to service, but it also leads to giving in every category of our lives. I wanted to read a definition that I found. This by a longtime believer who was actually in the Corps with me. His name is Gary Gudlin, and he has since passed away. But he put together this definition of compassion, and I thought it would really bless you. It's, "Compassion is the total heart involvement of a believer, prompted by the Spirit and directed toward the meeting of a particular need." I want to say it again. Compassion is the total heart involvement of a believer. Like, it takes your whole heart. It's all the feelings. It's being moved like that. Prompted by the Spirit. Hey, there's a guy over there. Go talk to him. Or, hey, if you call so-and-so right now, it'll be the perfect time. I mean, those promptings, see, are we need to answer them. And directed toward the meeting of a particular need. So, what kind of water does somebody need? Do they need teaching? Do they need healing? Do they need comfort? Do they need encouragement? What is the need? And then that compassion surrounds them and cushions them just like a baby in a mother's womb, and it provides all the spiritual life and health in every category that that person needs. And then it gets multiplied back to you. So that's what I wanted to talk about this morning with Mood with Compassion. God bless you.
I'm going to have Jan stay right here and ask you all to rise, please. And I'm going to ask, because my voice is whatever. Jeannie, if you could step up here. And we could sing, "We're So Glad You Were Born" for her birthday.